We're journeying towards Christmas and we're guided by the stars. We're looking at some passages where in the Bible where stars appear. And today we're going back to the beginning, in some ways, of the faith story of God's people, back to the story of Abraham, even before he was called Abraham. Like us, Abraham was waiting for a child. Waiting and in his wondering, God says to him, "Look at the sky and count the stars, if indeed you can count them." I've been looking at the stars this week as I stepped out of my back door on Tuesday morning, going to the garage to get the bread out of the freezer. Crisp, bright morning. There it was, shining brightly through the sky next to the moon, the bright morning star. And if you get up about 7 o'clock at the moment, if you look to the south or just to the east of south, you'll probably see it for the next week or so, this bright, clear, unflickering light shining in the sky. It's not, by the way, the star announcing the coming of Jesus, but it is Venus, high in the sky at the moment, shining brightly, the brightest light in the heavens. And it is a beauty to see. I just took this photograph on my phone as I stood there in my dressing gown, I have to add. And there's the crescent moon, and then this, it didn't quite capture the brilliance of Venus, but there it is, hanging in the dawn light, majestic sight. The heavens are a majestic sight. As I walked back from the deacon's meeting on Monday night, walking down the road, there it is, the first glimpse I've seen of Orion this year in the sky. The Orion, the constellation of the hunter, and then just off to one side, another bright star, Aldebaran, and then just above Aldebaran, actually the seven sisters, the Pleiades, the stars that Sarah chose to put on the screen in the worship time. I didn't manage to count them. I think I could only see five, not seven. The stars are a majestic sight, and Abraham in the darkness of that time, away from the towns in the wilderness of Canaan, he would have seen the majestic sight in the sky, majestic sight of the Milky Way, that cloudy band stretching. This is going off and on, so just use this one. That misty cloudy band stretching across the sky, looking through the disk of our galaxy. So many stars, they're just merging together to that background of light. We don't see very well through our galaxy because it's a dirty and dusty and murky place, so the light just kind of merges together. But we can see other galaxies to get an idea of what they are like. There you go. You can see that actually with the naked eye as well. It's just a fuzzy blob to the eye on a clear night, but this is the Andromeda Galaxy. 100 million stars, slightly bigger than our own galaxy. By the way, in 4.5 million years, that's going to hit our galaxy. They're flying towards each other. 2.5 million light years away. 2.5 million years ago, that light set out. Long time coming, that light. And yet that's only one of them. Each of those points of light in that picture are not stars, they're galaxies. In that one picture, there are 5,500 galaxies. And that picture is almost a pinprick in the sky. It's 1/100th of the size of the full moon. It's that little box there next to the moon. In that one little box of the sky, there are 5,500 galaxies. Just imagine. You can't imagine. You can't count them. You can't count how many there are across the entire sky. 250 billion of them.
This is the universe in which we live. And such images actually do not always bring peace. As we said last week, they do not always bring comfort. I was sent a copy of a book for Advent by David Kerrigan, who is the former director of BMS. And when I was preparing to go to Lebanon, I had the privilege of having nearly an hour with David, talking about BMS. And I was asking what he was going to do when he retired. And do you know, one of his interests is astronomy. And he said he's going to start doing astronomical photography with a telescope. He's going to start taking pictures of the stars. And I think some of that interest kind of shapes the early comments he makes as he goes through Advent in this book, The Prince of Peace in a World of Wars. This is what he said in one of the readings this week. One of our challenges as human beings is that often we struggle to hold between conflicting realities. There is the truth of our significance within God's creation, yet also the humbling truth of our physical insignificance within it. We are so small in the vastness of the universe. You don't need a space telescope to know that. Even the writer of the Psalms knew this when he looked at the heavens like Abraham and said, "What are human beings that you are mindful of them?" But you don't need to look at the stars to ask that question. You just need to think about the uncertainties of life that each one of us face at times. I wonder, in some ways, as I read this passage, what was God thinking when he said to Abraham, "Look at the sky and count the stars"? It can be an unsettling image, and perhaps not the best image to bring comfort in the face of fear, because Abraham was afraid. The first words God speaks to him are, "Do not be afraid." Abraham is a stranger in a strange land, and some might be thinking, as a stranger, he's getting too big for his boots. He'd grown rich. He'd gained influence and power. He had just defeated several local kings. And now, maybe in the face of that success, perhaps he realizes his vulnerability. That's a common thing, I think. Sometimes when we have had a high point in our lives, we have felt life is going well, it's been a success. It's strange in those moments how you can feel so vulnerable as you look forward to the future. Abraham felt vulnerable. And he felt vulnerable too in the face of God's big plan for him. He'd left the land where he was settled with his family. He had travelled to this unknown land to become a wandering herdsman. And yet God had promised him in this strange land. In a few chapters before we read this, God had said to him, "To your offspring I will give this land." He wanted to believe it, and yet that promise of God was the cause of his fear, because he had no offspring. And as he says to God here, when he died, it had all been inherited by a hired hand, a slave, Eliezer of Damascus. Abraham reveals his fears before God, before this promise of God. "You have given me no children." I think there are times when we need to do that. When the promises of God seem thin because of the circumstances of life. There is nothing wrong with complaint before God, reminding God of his promises. See, Abraham tried to live in faith of God's big promise, and yet at the moment, in this moment, it seemed like pie in the sky. and the doubts which he had, he feared perhaps would undermine his faith. And in response to the sky, God pointed him. And here is both comfort and challenge. We like the God of comfort. We like the stories of the baby in the manger to ooh and ah about. And yet, in the face of our uncertainty and our fear, God is not only the God who brings comfort. He brings challenge too. That is also the tension that we live with. A challenge to grow in our faith that God is able to fulfill and act according to his promises. A few weeks ago, Alan preached from Ephesians chapter 3. So did Sarah. Two bites of the same passage, two different perspectives. And there, let me remind you what Paul writes about the God that we have faith in, the God who comes to us at Jesus, to him who is able to do immeasurably more than we ask or imagine, according to his power at work within us. For all of us, for Abraham and us who follow him, part of daring to be a disciple is the challenge to grow in our expectation of God, not just to have this God as the one who brings comfort for our troubles, but the God who calls us on to a bigger faith, to faith in God's promise. Now, Abraham responded. At the end of this passage, it says, Abraham believed the Lord and was credited to him as righteousness. When Paul writes of the Christian faith to the Church of Rome, he calls Abraham the father of all who believe, because here Paul sees a model of faith, which is a pattern for faith in the God who sends Jesus. Paul writes about Abraham that he was fully persuaded that God had power to do what he promised. Now, I don't like to disagree with Paul, because it's in the Bible. But I wonder if Paul is doing what so often people do when they want to make a point. They kind of just focus in on one part of the story. But if you read the story of Abraham, it seems to me he needed a constant comfort and challenge to believe in that promise right through his life. It might say, Paul might say he was fully persuaded, but I somehow doubt it. If you read the rest of the story. And yet here for us is a model for how we enter life with God. See, it's not based on who we are. It's not based on what we do. It's not based on the achievements. It's not based on the blessing God gives to us. It's actually based in faith. Faith in the God who raised Jesus from the dead. And just like Abraham, at each step on our journey, we need the God who brings comfort in Christ, but also the challenge to follow Christ more. We need faith and vulnerability. We need faith and doubt living together to move us on, to allow God to move us on to bigger things. Abraham was constantly in need of reassurance that God's promise was on track. God just doesn't want to make us to feel happy and secure. The challenges that he brings to us, often when we feel vulnerable, when we need that comfort, the challenges he brings to us are often the test that he brings to us, that we are trusting in his promise, a promise which is greater than our fears and doubts. You see, the struggles of life can push us to greater faith. But don't wait for it to happen. Some exercise is needed. I am your shield, God says to Abraham. But you know, a shield needs to be used. We're not used to carrying shields, are we, these days? Not many of us walk down the road with a shield on our arm. You know? But if you were a soldier with a shield, you know, if you went into battle with it dangling on your arm by your side, you know what's going to happen? You're going to be dead. You're going to be dead. Very quickly. You need a shield. You need to hold it in front of you to protect you. I mean, we don't carry shields anymore, do we? But we do carry umbrellas. How many brought an umbrella this morning? Yeah, I didn't. I've watched the weather forecast. I might be wrong. But you know, there's no point just, if it's pouring out with rain, there's no point just leaving the umbrella in your bag or dangling by your side. You need to put it up, don't you? Well, what about sun cream? Anybody brought sun cream with them this morning? It's sunny now. There's no point putting it in your case when you go off on Ryanair or EasyJet or BA if you can afford it. There's no point in getting to that hot, sunny place and leaving it in your case. You've got to slap it on. You've got to slap it on. God protects us, yes, but we need to exercise faith in our thinking and in our acting. Later in the new year, we'll be continuing to look through Ephesians. And in Ephesians 6, Paul uses this image of the ancient soldier with the shield. He says, take up. Don't just leave it dangling there. Pick it up. Use it. Take up the shield of faith to extinguish all of the flaming arrows of the evil one. All the flaming arrows of the evil one. We need to exercise faith, even in the face of our weakness, even when we struggle to believe in the promise of God. There is real value when our faith is weak and dangling by a thread of reading the scriptures. There is real value, even if you cannot find your own words to do it, to take somebody else's prayer and declare faith. There's real value just in praying the Lord's Prayer in that moment of fear and weakness. An exercise of faith against the circumstances of life. I am your shield. I am your great reward. You know, Abraham only saw that in part in the end. But because despite his not being fully persuaded about God's promise, despite him searching for offspring in a myriad of different ways, God actually provided for him and his family. And yet he didn't see it all. He didn't see the stars in the sky, which were going to be its offspring, unnumbered. He only saw a part of it. And yet, even with that partial view, even with his fears, he trusted God. Do not be afraid. Comfort, yes. Challenge, yes. The first words that God spoke to Abraham in the face of his fear. Words also that you'll find in the Christmas story. To Joseph, faced with a pregnant fiancée. Do not be afraid. To Mary, faced with an unplanned and surprising pregnancy. Do not be afraid. To shepherds sitting under the stars that Abraham saw, surprised by angels, do not be afraid. All caught up in God's bigger purpose that they were unprepared for. And we too can feel small in the face of the majesty and vastness of the universe, the perplexity of Brexit, the troubles and uncertainties of our own individual lives. And maybe this Christmas a chance to feel small in the hugeness of God's plan in the coming of Jesus, the bright morning star. In our vulnerability before God, God does not only give comfort, but he gives challenge. And so I ask you again, the same as I asked last week, what will you receive this Christmas? What do you need this Christmas from Jesus? For he is coming soon. I, Jesus, the bright morning star.